This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. Let's listen in to a class on cyber law.
So, report, submission, timestamp. The evidence is presented. Comments are made.
We sent a producer to the basement of Griswold Hall at Harvard Law School to record this lively group of students and their professor as they discuss their most recent assignment. Their task is to resolve disputes taking place on the website wikipedia.com. This month, we're reporting on cybercrime. This week, our series continues with the issue of cyber law. It's a rapidly growing field. Cybersecurity expert Jim Lewis says as companies, individuals, and governments increasingly use the Internet, they're entering unfamiliar legal territory.
They move their activities. That means there's legal problems. That means there's value. That means there's disputes. We're in a period of transition, and part of that transition is adjusting both our laws and our legal workforce to be able to deal with the new environment.
Has anybody read this? No? Some people are grinning. Those are the people who read it.
Jonathan Zittrin knows a lot about that new environment. He also knows about preparing the legal profession. Zittrin has been teaching students about law and the Internet for the past decade. Currently, he's a visiting professor at Harvard Law School, and he took a moment from his class to explain cyber law to us.
There was a period in the late 1990s when cyber law was, how do I make a lot of money on the Internet? So electronic commerce came to the fore, venture capital funding, all of these elements of building a business in a hurry and taking it public, that became part of cyber law. I think now cyber law is being thought of more holistically as, what are the distinct ways in which the networks and the objects hooked up to them are empowering people, both to do great new things and to hurt each other terribly, and how can we maximize the former and minimize the latter?
What do you consider to be the most pressing cyber law issues?
The most pressing cyber law issues to me have to do with what I call maintaining a generative network. And by generative, I mean open to innovation and creation by outsiders. When we look at some of the most interesting innovations that have happened on the Internet, they've surprisingly been from corners that weren't well-funded, that weren't planned out, and they weren't incumbents. If a man named Jimbo came up to you in 2001 and said, I've got a great idea. It's an encyclopedia that'll be rivaling Britannica in quality and timeliness, and it'll be edited by anyone in the world. Anybody can add or delete or edit an article. I think any of us might have said, Jimbo, you're nuts. And yet, somehow, here's Wikipedia, and it's working.
But doesn't it bring up certain issues, for example, if someone's biography is up there
Absolutely.
And you get someone changing it?
Absolutely. We could very quickly, doctrinally, say, why, that's defamation. That's harmed someone's reputation. It's spreading lies about them. And just as if you were to publish a newspaper article defaming somebody and then have to pay for it, I suppose somebody creating a Wikipedia article about somebody that defamed them might have to pay. You'd have to find them and hope that they're not 12 and or poor. I think it turns to intermediary liability. Under what circumstances could we say to Wikipedia and others in Wikipedia's position, you have a legal duty to police what others are putting up about people and to make sure either that you tell us who they are when they get into trouble or that you police the content of the articles themselves.
I want to talk a little bit about the social networks, the sites like Facebook or MySpace. This is where people voluntarily put up a lot of personal information about themselves. And once that information is out there, they don't really own it anymore. So what problems do you foresee that these users are likely to encounter?
I think we've just seen the tip of the iceberg on the privacy problems. In my view, the real problems are going to come as we deploy a little bit more technology. And I don't think it's unrealistic or science fiction to say that as you are a tourist and you go about taking pictures of your family around the world, those pictures that you take are flowing immediately up to a website like Flickr or Facebook. They're getting tagged automatically with the identity through facial recognition, not only of your family in the foreground, but of other people in the restaurant in the background. And then we'll be able to query the database and say, who came into and out of this restaurant between this hour and this hour, or who was in front of this Planned Parenthood clinic, or who was participating in this demonstration or this rally for a political candidate. And it's these sorts of things that I don't think we fully confronted yet, that really will lead to a level of transparency, ironically, not being brought about by Big Brother government or even by Big Snoop credit reporting agency or business, but by an army of the world's tourists, ourselves, for completely innocuous reasons.
Zittrin says the fact that society is still trying to figure out how to deal with the legal minefield of the internet is a healthy thing. He also says that innovations in technology, as well as social networks on the internet itself, may help solve some of the problems. In his current class, Zittrin has a couple of teaching assistants who help pull up slides and often facilitate discussion. The students took his class last year. We asked one of them, Elizabeth Stark, what she'd learned from her experiences with cyber law.
The digital space provides a new context in which to examine all of these other areas of law. So I think the one thing that I've taken with me is that we need to re-examine law in the context of the technologies that will enable you to copy anything, to communicate instantaneously.
In a typical class, Professor Zittrin covers subjects ranging from ownership of the internet to self-governance online. To supplement his lectures, guest speakers are often invited to share their expertise. So we introduced a guest of our own to Elizabeth Stark. We put her on the phone with Kevin Mitnick, who was once America's most famous computer hacker. He spent nearly 5 years in prison and now works as a cybersecurity consultant.
Very cool. I've seen a movie about him, actually. Kevin, hi.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I'm actually wondering, has your very vast experience in the field of hacking caused you to change your mind or take stances on issues regarding, say, freedom on the internet, cybersecurity, pretty much anything regarding activism or policy with technology?
Well, for example, I disagree with the policies about allowing the National Security Agency basically to data mine American citizens' telephone calls and the internet usage. I believe that our civil liberties and the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure are real important.
Professor Zittrin also had the chance to ask Mitnick a question.
For the listener who is about to put holiday photos online and do banking and buy stuff and all this other great stuff and is wondering whether that's a dumb idea, what's your advice?
Well, I do online banking. I pay my credit cards online. I do everything online. I think there's more of a benefit to using the tools on the internet rather than the fear of being compromised. What the important advice I could have is don't become the low-hanging fruit for the attacker out there.
We'll hear more from Kevin Mitnick as our cybercrime series continues. Our thanks to Jonathan Zittrin, a visiting professor at Harvard Law School. Next week, we visit the FBI and Justice Department to find out how they investigate and prosecute cyber fraud, as well as how to protect yourself.
If there's a burglar in your community, in your neighborhood, you as the homeowner are responsible to make sure you've got your doors locked, you've got an alarm system, you keep your outside lights on. That's your responsibility as the homeowner. Similar with computers, you've got to have your antivirus up to speed, you've got to have a firewall in place, you've got to monitor that and take a look and ensure that people aren't intruding into your computers.